This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. It's now 7:34. I'm Melissa Idris with Tan Chung Han and Julian Ng this morning to take a look at the business news of the day. Now, the next interest rate in the US, that hike in the interest rates could be closer than it appears. And this is after documents released last night showed that the US Federal Reserve officials spent most of their meeting 3 weeks ago consumed with changes brought on by the new administration in the White House. And at the end of the meeting, concluding that another hike could be just around the corner. So analysts are betting on March, but what do you think, Han?
Well, so if you're going to look at the Fed funds futures rate, yeah, that's basically a barometer for, you know, how much markets are pricing in a Fed rate hike for this March meeting that's slated for March 14th and 15th. It's only about a 1 in 3 chance, about a 34% chance. But once you go into subsequent meetings, it gets to, you know, over 50%, so better than even chance, right? So, I mean, well, again, I mean, I think we have to put this into context because given how much everyone has talked about Fed rate hikes, the fact of the matter is we have only seen a measly 2 rate hikes in the last 2 years, you know. But of course, the big difference now is Trump. And Julian, you even spoke about that with our market analyst this morning, huh?
Yeah, I think that the consensus right now, including Ben LeBron, whom we spoke to this morning, is going for about three rate hikes this year, and that would bring the rates to about 0.5 or 0.75%, depending on whether it's 2 or 3. So that is the consensus position at the moment. But a lot of it also depends on whether Trump can carry out and can implement his desires to reflate the U.S. economy. For example, take the wall. Right, take the wall. Everyone knows about the wall.
Slash fence.
And other construction projects. I'm not sure how much faith the U.S. markets have baked in to this kind of projects because they are really short on details. And these are very major parts of his economic jigsaw puzzle to reflate the U.S. market this year.
No, but at the same time, you know, Yellen wants to paint, that's Janet Yellen, the chair of the Federal Reserve. You know, she paints this picture that the Federal Reserve is still very much, you know, independent. It will not be persuaded.
Right.
It will not base its plans on U.S. interest rates based on the fiscal side. You know, she's saying, if you recall, I think last week she said, you know, that the economy's solid progress is what is driving our policy decisions. But again, based on the conversations that we have constantly had with analysts from around the world, you know, they're saying, well, that's idealistic at best. You know, it is, you know, just that kind of PR spiel, so to speak. But the reality is, you know, she's not able to, you know, really make that clear separation between fiscal and monetary, you know, hence why we're talking about it right now.
I'll give you an example. You know, when the Federal Reserve says they cannot be influenced by the politics of the day, but yet at the same time, they essentially are because the economy is influenced by the politics of the day. So because this was the first meeting since Trump took office, so the minutes showed the president's name was never mentioned in the minutes, but in broad brushes, his agenda would show up.
No, well, it results in inflation, right? I mean, if there's too much reflation, which is a fiscal policy, there would be impact, upward pressure on the inflation. That's why they would have to take note of that. I'm not sure if it's too much of a separation between fiscal and monetary policy. Inflation would become a monetary agenda, item on the agenda. But there is also one other very important thing that the Fed has to do, which is what kind of signals they are sending to the markets, because the officials were concerned, that the Fed officials, that is, were concerned that markets did not believe that policymakers in December, the markets did not believe them when they said that they would raise interest rates 3 times in 2017.
Yeah,
so now the Fed has a duty to send a strong signal to the market that they mean business. Otherwise, this would be a never-ending sugar rush. As we know that the U.S. market is already on some of the strongest bull runs for decades, which can develop into bubbles. So the Fed needs to be concerned about that as well.
Yeah, no, certainly. No, Julian, just to make it clear that I guess Yellen appears to be giving the impression, you know, of having that distinction, that clear distinction between monetary and fiscal. But yes, you're right. In reality, you know, it's not so clear cut. And also, Melissa, going back to what you said about her not or her and her colleagues not saying Trump, you know, I do remember her previous press conference right after that early February meeting. And despite all these reporter questions asking her about Trump, she made it so, I mean, she made such a concerted effort not to say his name. It's almost like the T word of her. But then, you know, going back to economic data, you know, I mean, for example, inflation, like Julian mentioned just now, it's moved up to 2.5% in January. That is the largest increase, on-year increase since March 2012. You've also got the latest jobs reports showing, you know, employers added over 220,000 jobs in January. You know, so again, you've got that slack in the labor market certainly being picked up. You know, so it's a tighter labor market now. Inflation moving up as well. You know, that could you know, hasten the Fed to move forward. Now, what does all this mean for us, though, Malaysians? I think we've got to keep in mind, usually Fed rate hike, dollar goes up, ringgit comes down. That's the traditional, conventional storyline. But of course, we as Malaysians, we have to wait and see. We are at their mercy, though, really.
Yeah, I think that that's one other thing that would bring us to our knees and affect the markets around the world, which is that the Fed has a portfolio, what they call their balance sheet, that amounts to about $4.5 trillion right now. The Fed indicated that they would take some time to unravel this. They don't want to shock the markets too much, because if they start doing that, it may be counterproductive to some of the progress that has been made to bring the U.S. economy up to speed.
The other big news also markets are looking at are oil prices. Now, Qatar's oil minister said that big oil producers outside OPEC aren't cutting production as much as they pledged. So Mohammad Al-Sadr, who's Qatar's oil minister, and he was also a key negotiator of that OPEC deal we saw at the end of last year. Now, he says that non-OPEC members had promised to cut about 50% of the total. OPEC members had promised to cut a certain amount, and right now they've only cut 50%. So are we looking at, you know, when this deal was struck, there was a whole lot of optimism, but are we looking at a reversal of that now?
Well, you know, keeping in mind that this proposed cut, or these cuts that they agreed to back in December, this was just on an interim six-month deal. You know? So we are already now at the end of February, we're about halfway there, you know, and yet, you know, we're only seeing about 50% of the total promise, right? So now, if you look at oil futures, Brent futures, for example, it's been pretty range-bound. I believe it's just above $56 a barrel right now. You know, so, you know, markets are starting to get a bit uneasy, you know, well, feeling a bit uneasy, you know, given to, you know, hey, all those optimism we had at the end of last year, where are the cuts? You know, why is it going down?
I think this refers to the agreement by non-OPEC members, right?
Yes.
So the non-OPEC members would be a smaller component of the entire OPEC member. I don't know whether the OPEC members are themselves keeping to the promises, but Russia is such a big producer as far as the non-OPEC members are concerned, and they themselves have only fulfilled one-third of their promised cuts. And that shelf life up to the middle of the year, I mean, it's such a monumental task to negotiate production agreements with the entire world. Whether they will be able to pull this off again in July is in doubt.
I have to say that, Jules, Russia, that you brought up Russia is important, because I think Russia is the wild card in this OPEC and non-OPEC agreement. Whether Russia would play ball was really a huge thing. And, you know, apparently we want to see them, the more that they cut output, I think if Russia plays by the rules, then I think more optimism will return to this deal.
And don't forget that Trump is also egging on the U.S. energy industry.
Right.
So a lot of production could spill out of the United States, and which is why ABM AMRO has forecasted possibly a $30 per barrel oil price. And that would be bad news for the rest of us.
Yeah, you know, because especially considering that Malaysia has used the $45 a barrel mark to base budget 2017 on. So $30, you know, like we will be in a lot of trouble. But, you know, real quick, yeah, Julian, that's a good segue here, because, you know, the states, you know, we got to look at what shale is producing as well, because if you look at the recent numbers from the American Petroleum Institute, you've also got some official data from the Energy Information Administration that's due overnight our time. But you've got crude inventories in the states at its highest level since 1982. that was before I was born, FYI. You know, so it's a really, really high right there. So, you know, you want to talk about that oversupply, that is still very much in the picture. So, yeah, Julian, you're right. It's not just an OPEC thing. We have to look at non-OPEC, not just Russia, but the states as well.
Well, very quickly, guys, let's take a look at this news that Google is planning to expand a carpool service on its Waze app, which, of course, Google owns. Now, they're going into direct competition with Uber, which, you know, they have a head start in this ride-sharing industry. But what's going to happen if Google Waze goes head-to-head with Uber?
Yeah, that'll be interesting. But I think a clear distinction has to be made here. Uber's business model is where a driver who commits to Uber will then, you know, drive passengers around. Whereas these guys, Waze, their model is slightly different. So they say if you, Melissa, you're headed from your home to the office and on the way you could pick up some people, then you could, you know, help monetize your ride right there. So I think that's a distinction.
Yeah,
but still.
It's Waze is coming up with a kind of carpooling model, whereas the ride sharing involved in taxi hailing services. But, you know, GPS and mapping is such a strategic component for not only Uber and Grab, but for Google as well. So whether Google can squeeze their ride-sharing apps is a stuff of regulatory concern, because they can use, Google can use that to their advantage. But at the moment, and it'd be very expensive for the likes of Uber to develop their own mapping services. So for the moment, I think Google, I don't know what how Uber or Waze, how Uber or Grab uses their mapping service, right? I'm sure they rely on Waze or Google Maps.
Well, actually, that's what I was going to raise. No, it's like, so you got Uber, you got Waze. Is this the death of Google Maps? Like, are they even relevant anymore?
Google Maps owns Waze, actually.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, Google owns Waze, but you got still two different apps, though, you know what I mean? So it's like, well, why even bother with Google Maps? I don't know. I'm just putting it out there.
Okay, well, it's 7:45 right now, and after this, we're going to take a look at whether Saudi Aramco could be looking into coming in on the rapid project. News on that after this on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.